Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, where you will find the perfect blend of food, fun, and cooking knowledge. I'm your host, Carl Fiodini. Welcome to the number one food podcast in the country. We're recording on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive, and I get to eat it. Here's a humble request. I've been doing this. Give a follow on Instagram at Walk and Talk Show, please, and thank you. I'm into quality smoked fish dips and spreads. I know you are too. Check out our friends over at Crab Island Seafood Company. Visit them at crabislandseafooddip.com to order yours today. I recommend it. Last week we had New York's hot diggity dog king, Dan Rossi, on the program. Man, the story, it's grit personified. It's a must listen. The guy's cool. The family's cool. You got to check it out. I want to give a big thanks to Stacy Archer at Get Cooking for connecting us with Michelin chef Tung Fan at Camille in Orlando. Great photos by John Hernandez at Ibis Images coming up. Okay, so this week we've got our friend, dear friend, Chef Jonathan Rodriguez in studio. He's cooking up some Crescent City meats. It's some fennel sausage. Ooh. The dish is beautiful. I saw it, but I ate it. Oh, yeah. He's been making moves from Food Network appearances to winning local food and wine food competitions. But forget all that. We're going to get into the restaurant life today. It's food addiction and how chefs are dealing with it. And that's a twofer because, you know, Chef Jeffrey's got his book out that deals with that specific thing. And naturally... Chef Jonathan Rodriguez has something to add, so stay tuned. Chef Jonathan is on deck, but first, oh, Jefferson, my man, the food today, spectacular.
Thank you.
Oh my goodness. What a day today. I'm happy. My belly's happy.
That's the first time I've seen John smile like that in a while.
Yeah, well, it's good times here today, man. Go ahead, talk about it.
Yeah, so since Jonathan was coming in, and he's got a background of being Puerto Rican and Italian, I wanted to pay a little honor to him and his traditions and stuff like that. Didn't want to do anything traditional because, again, I can't cook like that because I'm not Puerto Rican. I'm not Italian. Although I've been cooking Italian food for over 20 years. I don't want to do that. I want to show the way I do things, but I twisted things up. So we did a mofongo, but instead of doing the mashed yunca, we did fried.
Wait a minute. Isn't your name like Jeffrey Schlesilio or something like that?
No, it's more like Schlisselberg.
Okay.
The not Schlisselini. Okay. Without the D. Touche. So what I did was I did a mofongo, but I didn't, instead of doing the mashed yunca that you do, I did it fried. I did oxtail. I love oxtail. Did that jerked. Wanted to do the little island theme to it, a little coconut rum as well. And then we did a little sauteed greens, and then we had the pork cracklings on the outside as like a crunch. And then most of everything that's done in Puerto Rico is similar to what you would have in, let's say, dishes like a mother or Trinity, the Holy Trinity, like we talked about from New Orleans or Louisiana. It's like green pepper, celery, and the black pepper, or the bit blackening seasoning, and the onion. That's their version of it. Sofrito for Puerto Ricans is just like peppers and onions and garlic and little citrus juice and so on and so forth. I wanted to pay a little bit more respect to it, roasted it up, and then I actually turned it into a paper. And then put that on there for a little added crunch, a little more depth, because things come out a little bit different.
For it being literally looking like a piece of paper, when you take a little piece and you eat it, the flavor profile, profiles, the layers,
yeah.
and the punch that you get out of that, it's amazing, because you really don't expect that out of what you're looking.
Right.
The visual doesn't do it justice.
No, and it's funny because I actually was cutting it up with scissors.
Right.
And it felt like cardboard paper as you're doing it, or cardstock.
Construction paper.
Yeah, exactly. And we did it, set it up beautifully. I had a little bit of a black garlic demi. And the black garlic is almost, if you've ever had Marmite from England or Vegemite, it's got a real intense mushroomish flavor. And when you do that to the garlic, you're actually imparting a lot more complexity to it. So that was the one dish. And then I was looking for something different because we know how John loves to do sandwiches. I know like last guest said that same thing, but it's actually Pooch. I heard him say that. I wanted to do a triplet or triplet, and he'll know the name of it. Anyways, it's a sandwich that has three different meats in it. It has pork, it has ham or chicken, and the beef. So I did it with the oxtail pork butt. I did a lechon kind of version of it. And then I did chicken, which was marinated in different Latin spices and seasonings. Put that on a baguette with pickled cabbage, pickled onions, which I know you love. And then we did Gruyere on it. I did a blistered tomato with roasted garlic aioli, and just put it all together. And that thing looked absolutely stunning. Funny thing though, sidebar. About 2 years ago almost, I was fabricating a pig for one of our farmers. I brought it inside, put it on the cutting board, started to fabricate it in front of my wife. My wife stopped eating pork right then and there. Fast forward to 2 days ago, went out to the smoker, threw the thing on the pork butt on the smoker, came inside. She started smelling it. She's like, "What is that?" I'm like, "You won't eat it. It's pork." She goes, "I think I need to try it." Lo and behold, now she's eating pork again.
She's back on the wagon.
Yeah, she's back on the wagon.
On the pork wagon. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
See, to me, that's that's a feel-good story.
Huge, because again, when you're talking to somebody that doesn't eat something and you convert them back to eating it because you're the first one that actually stopped them from eating it in the first place, I kind of feel like I've got my, I did a good deed there for the day.
I mean, it's a full circle. Total strange family dynamic.
Yeah.
Not going to lie.
Well.
But, I mean.
Pork butt.
You're doing a good work out there.
Try it.
You're doing the good deeds.
Yeah.
Man.
Lastly, I wanted to pay something different from like a tres leches, which is a porter or Latin type of dessert. I looked around and said, "Oh yeah, pina colada, Bacardi rum, all that, coconut rum, what a perfect thing." But I didn't want to do something normal. And Jonathan, being the Italian in him, I was like, "Ooh, panna cotta." So I did a panna cotta coconut. Had coconut, like actual coconut flakes in there from real coconut, not like the desiccated. I took fresh, dried it out. And then I built the layers of a brown butter rum cake, dehydrated part of that. Then it had rum cake in there as well. Had pineapple mousse. We had pineapple jelly. We had beach sand that was edible from coconut sugar and coconut. And then lastly, I wanted to pay a little, because it's coming to fall, I wanted to do cranberry relish, but I didn't want to do it the same. I actually did it with some black garlic and some peppers.
Do you remember how when Cassie was here?
Yes.
And she had her Cassie dance?
Yeah.
So I don't have a dance, but what I do is I get like a 1,000-yard stare and I just like, I'm in another little zone space.
Oh, I have a video of you eating that.
Yeah. Well, everything I ate today, I just sat and I had that like distance stare and I'm just taking bites and enjoying, you know, the moment all day today.
Yeah.
Really
it's,
great.
It's, I love cooking craveable food. And that's the point. When you do something you're passionate about and people eat the food and you can see them have these moments like, oh my God, I can't believe that. Or you can see it in their face and their eyes. Like John kept on talking about the chicken and how did you do it? And it was literally, I smoked it for 20 minutes. That's it.
That's it. Simple. John, you can do this too, you know.
Oh, he can. He can throw it down. I know he can.
Oh, he's all right.
He's got that really nice smoker out back.
Yeah, he's got a lot of gadgets.
Yeah, well, yeah.
For somebody who doesn't cook like professionally, he's got a lot of stuff.
Did you see the plates?
He sure does.
Nobody brought you on yet.
I knew that was going to come.
Wait.
Thank you, John.
From the green room. All right, so yeah, all right. You cats out of the bag. All right. Well, let's get my Puerto Rican pies on here on the air. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
It's always good to be back home. Thank you, guys.
Of course. Dude, your dish, fire.
Thank you.
I mean, you saw the pictures too already.
They're gorgeous. Yeah. Shout out to John.
Unedited, sure. Just raw. Gorgeous.
Appreciate that. It was definitely beautiful ingredients together. I wanted to do something that is a dish that's, you know, really sentimental in our heart. So this dish right here, we took the delicious sausage and broke it out of the casing. I wanted to give it a little bit more of a flair. Took the leeks and took some of the garlic oil and then cooked that so that instead of putting all of the flavors, because the sausage has phenomenal flavor just from the start. So we just wanted to give it a little bit more of a like, you know, when you eat that bite. So toasted that for a little bit. And then once I got it to that nice crisp that I wanted, I go in and I took a sausage, mixed it, put it to the side, broke it to the pieces we wanted, and then broke into it, put it in the oven and cooked it for a good about 6 minutes, 7 minutes. And then we made the tomato sauce from scratch, which is awesome. You know, some tomato sauces are mostly made without butter. You know, I did like a nice little Pomodoro style, you know, and add butter to it, roasted the tomatoes. So the tomatoes were roasted and gave it a better fiery feel to it when they're eating this dish. And we, you know, sauteed it all in this beautiful composed sauce dish with some penne and broccolini and sausage, and you know you can't have a dish without cheese, so instead of eating on it with all this Parmesan cheese, we just use beautiful fresh burrata cheese. And I'm surprised I didn't eat the whole thing.
I got to it first, but here's the thing.
Hashtag truth.
Yeah. But I want everyone to know, like, you know, John, Chef Jonathan is a real one, you know. So we're cooking here at Walk and Talk, you know, Ibis Images, Walk and Talk podcast. So a lot of it, it's always going to be for flavor. It's always going to be for taste. You know, it's not something where we're using a lot of, you know, fake stylist sort of things to take the pictures and everything. We eat here. But hold on. No, button it up, Jeff. Hold on. But here's the situation. We are on a timeline. Like we there's a lot to get done. We're doing photography, cooking, and a podcast all in one day. So that's just how we do it. I gave Chef Jonathan an out. You know, I brought some, you know, Rouse sauce, which they do a really great, you know, marinara. They do a great job. So I brought some because I didn't know what the timing was going to be and whatever. And he goes, well, this would be great, but I'm here to cook, man.
Facts.
And man, I'm glad you did.
Yeah, shout outs to the company, but you know.
Yeah, I'm saying, you know, I don't shout out anybody for, you know, but they really do a good job.
They really do. It's really, it's delicious. But it's not authentic and walk and talk unless you cook, right?
Yeah.
So authenticity is the key always, especially to a chef's heart.
Definitely.
And to back to Jeff's sandwich, the tripleta.
Tripletas, thank you.
What is the name of that sandwich?
Tripleta.
Say it again.
Tripleta. So big sandwich in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
By far, they take the ends of all the meats that they cook. So think about how much meat they actually cook on a daily basis, right? And, you know, Puerto Ricans is just like, you know, just as loving as Italians. We cook a lot, right? So whatever they use towards the end is where they get the most creative. And that particular sandwich, I remember eating that with my dad in Puerto Rico. So that was a sentimental deposit. So thank you so much.
Cool.
For sure.
That's awesome.
We love hitting the emotional chords here.
I mean, that's what
food is that.
Yeah. Exactly what I was about to say. Until they invent a time machine, food is that time machine.
Correct.
Because he just said it. When I remember back when I was a kid eating
food and music. Pocket. Food and music is the number one key that speaks everybody's heart.
The problem when you're talking about a flavor memory, it's one thing is, you know, you can go to a restaurant, you could try to recreate. But every now and again, when you do hit that one real flavor memory, it's so fleeting. You get it, and you're like, oh man, I want to hold on to it. I want to grab it. And then, man, it just slips right through your fingers. And it's immediately, you can't live in it.
You're 100% right. My wife made a meatloaf, right? And this was, last year, right? And it's another emotional deposit on this one, right? She made a meatloaf, my mom, right? I only ate her meatloaf because that meatloaf she made was like very, very to the heart. It wasn't like just random meats put together. But I mean, her meatloafs, I mean, she put like literally eggs in it, right? Mm-hmm. So you got the hard boiled eggs in it. So it was like real old school, right? Yeah. So you got this woman that's making these things and, you know, never put ketchup on it, right? So I didn't know what that was. But just legitimately like traditional meatloaf. My wife made it, and I said, hey, can you just do me a favor, and please forgive me whoever does make it with ketchup, right? Because obviously it does taste delicious as well. But she made it, and it tastes just like my mother's. And I actually started crying. I was like, oh, my gosh. I was like, I can't believe this. Like, you know, like, how did you make this close? You've never made meatloaf with my mother. But, the one thing she did was watch. So it's just that important, right? It doesn't matter what age. That's how I started.
Right.
Right. Started watching my parents watch them cook, and that's how you grow. You know, that's just really where your intrigue is the most, and you don't know if you're going to grow into a chef over those years.
So here's the thing, and this is a great segue into what we're going to talk about today. Is this where food addiction starts?
Correct.
At home?
Correct.
It's also societal, right? You know, growing up, think about it. If you didn't finish something, what were your parents saying to you?
Finish it.
Or there are starving children in Africa. You know, there's that kind of sentiment. Or you want dessert? You got to finish your meal first. Yep. So that is the precursor for what it does. Now, being a chef, it amplifies it because we're around food all day. And the one thing we don't want to do ever is eat while we're cooking.
Correct.
It's the last thing that's on our mind. So what we do when we get off of work, McDonald's is open, Burger King's open. Uh-huh. And that's a misnomer. A lot of people think we eat these lavish meals. My God, I wish I could, but I don't. We have a saying in the restaurant business, eat it now, taste it later.
Correct.
And that's the truth. We have to eat that fast. And those things have to change.
And the tasting, right? So we taste and think about it. You know, so many chefs are so talented with their palates, right? I think that's where the real science comes to. And nobody's palate is identical, right? And that's where each chef is so unique in so many different ways. And I love cooking with Jeff because Jeff, I mean, we did it all day today, right? Jeff, come over here. Right. And then sometimes I'll throw Carl and John in. But Carl and John, you know, you guys are amazing. You guys definitely give a good opinion. But, you know, Jeff, you know, he doesn't care about the emotional deposit. He's like, no, this tastes disgusting. You need to work on this. You know, so I love it. I mean, the honesty is key, right? Never had to have that happen, guys. So just letting you know, putting it out there.
If it did,
Jeff would be the first one to be like, McDonald's tonight. But
drive through on the way home.
But you know, realistically, you know, it's just that is just so unique, right? And everybody, right? Everybody cooks. Everybody is using that emotional statement for them purposely. And, you know, the addictiveness, right? You're addicting to something that you either can be super in love with or it can super hurt you, right?
Right.
It's a double-edged sword.
It is. Jeff, name of the book.
It's called Craveable Obsessed, Journals of a Food Addicted Chef.
Okay.
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
With that said, Jonathan, Chef Jonathan, we were having a conversation earlier today, and you know, obviously, over the last year, you've had a lot of changes, a lot of things happening.
Right.
One of them for you is health.
Correct.
And with that, why don't you kind of get into a little bit what's been going on with you, because I think your situation has every bit to do with this guy's book.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I do own a copy of Chef Jeffrey Snitchell.
I've gotten text messages from him.
Yes, yes. I said, "Where's my book?"
And not only that, we've had conversations.
Yes, I will tell you that for those that are listening, that book couldn't have put a bigger target in what we feel, and I 100% related to that book. The life as a chef is almost. It's so optimistic. Everybody thinks that, you know, you're coming in and you're just cooking and you're just handling your business and you go on and throw it, right? They don't understand that the 90% of the responsibility is running the business, being creative, and keeping trend. That is the most difficult part of being in this business. There's new chefs coming on every single day. There's new chefs growing every single day. And, you know, when you are surrounded in a room with the talented chefs that are in this area, right? Or even Chef Jeff, right? You know, when you're around talent like that and you're able to see the growth of every single person from day to day and where you are now, right? And where we are now, it's almost like a dream. It does never feel real. For me, it just never felt real. Going into the kitchen is the only thing that makes me feel real. Cooking makes me feel real. You know, where I'm at now today in my life, it just feels like a big dream, you know, and that's just probably the most beautiful thing about it. But, health is everything, right? I would say that I'm a working horse. So, I did not pay attention to, you know, myself as I should, you know, married, 4 kids, you know, working, dealing with a team. 90% of the time you're so put up front to ensure that you're taking care of those that are in front of you that you always put yourself in the back burner. So when you're in the back burner, it's so difficult, right? To almost think about where you want to be in your health. My health was taking a toll, and I'm very blessed to be here to even do this podcast with you guys. You know, I started with my heart, respectfully. I was suffering some congested heart failure. I was not breathing at night properly, and you know, stop breathing. So, you know, moving on that, you know, you, instead of taking advantage and saying, listen, something's wrong with me, I just put it under the rug and just never paid attention. A year later, I go and do a CPAP test, and the lady runs into the room and she's like, "Hey, I'm so glad you woke up, because I thought I had to call the ambulance." And I was like, looking at her like she was crazy. I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And she's like, "You stopped breathing for a little bit too long." She's like, "I've been doing this for over 20 years and never have I ever seen this ever happen." And I was like, "Oh, wow." I was like, so she's like, "Yeah, well, I think it's best you go to the hospital." I was like, I was like, it's a long test. I've been here for a very long time. I don't know if I want to come back and do all this. I was like, listen, ma'am, I got to take a flight out. I'm a chef. And she's like, that's great. Well, it's good to know that's your last career they're going to be working for this week. And I just like, whoa, what? She's like, you have two choices. You can make a change and want your life longer, or this would be the last time we'll probably talk. And I've been working here for about 16 years. So it kind of threw you off a little bit, right? Sitting in a car, heading home, thinking about this and trying to get a little bit more of an understanding of what this woman has said to me. And I realized that I've been so emotionally, you know, affected and so mentally affected because reality is that I just stood focused at work, right? Sometimes you forget you're a husband. Sometimes you forget you're a dad. It's you live in a yes chef type of world. So the reality is to get work done, get it done sufficiently and make sure that you perfect every mode. It's probably the most hardest thing in an average day person, you know, but, we're not 8 to 5. So realistically is that, do I keep pushing myself to want to be better or do I, give myself a death ticket? It's troubling sometimes, you know, I go day in and day out and you know, it can defeat you at times. Mental health is everything to people. I think that I know the book that, you know, Jeff wrote and put out, you know, I think there's a lot of chefs that have the same similarity. It's just not every chef has the opportunity to speak up. And this is the opportunity that, you know, chefs like me can actually step forward and say, wow, thank you. Thank you for speaking up. Thank you for putting that opportunity out for us. Thank you for giving us the momentum of wanting to be better and why we should be better and where the love and the compassion really comes in. That's where you have to really, you know, like subsidize and say, listen, this needs to change. You know, went to the doctor and they do two different scans. And, you know, I was telling you guys this earlier, I couldn't believe it. They do two different scans. They scan your heart once and then they scan your whole body. And it's two different big tests that they do. And, you know, I said, let me take this test. Let me see it. You know, and I draw my blood and all that great stuff. And the lady comes back. She's like, listen, your cholesterol is 260. You got to take some medicine. I said, okay, well, at least that's not that too bad. Right. She's like, well, 260 is not the great number, but let's figure it out. I said, okay, well, what do I got to do? Cause I don't take medicine. So I'll be honest with you. I get up and grab my beautiful Starbucks and, keep it moving, you know, and, just work 35 hours straight and not think about it. She's like, well, let's just do this. Why don't you, when you wake up, you forget about the Starbucks, stop working 35 hours, and start realizing that you're living life. You're not living a robot. I was like, wow, touche. So got the scans back. And realistically, they come to me and they say, well, you have about a good 6 years and probably passed away. And I was like, wait, what? 6 years? You think about that. You sit back and you really think about that. And I remember I sat in the front of my porch and my house and I was like, these people said 6 years. 6 years is what they said. I couldn't believe it. I said, you know, the science is crazy, right? They learn so much today that nobody learned years ago. And could we have saved the loved ones back in the days? Yeah, but, you know, time is a channel, right? So we have to constantly, you know, be able to make movement. But that's when I realized, like, wow, you need to wake up because 6 years, your kids are still in school. 6 years, I haven't made it to any of my children is getting married. 6 years, I'm not growing old with my wife. 6 years, I'm not seeing anything. So I realized that. The reality is 6 years needs to be 60 years and no longer be just six. I made a complete change in my life and changed my whole food mentality. I learned that food is medicine. And you're never taught that as a chef. Food is medicine. Food is something that you ingest and there's opportunities for every item in this world, right? We pay for food and we get easy access and we go to these fast food restaurants. But what do you learn from them? Nothing. Besides an everyday item that you can get at the arm reach. How does that help you? It doesn't. So I took it seriously. I did a low calorie diet, low cholesterol diet. I treated myself like I'm celiac And the last time I seen you guys, I was 496. And today I'm 423.
Nice.
It's crazy.
6 years hardly put you at 40.
Correct.
And that's one, that's a massive drop in weight, man. Good for you.
Thank you.
That and it's not easy.
It's not.
And it's not, and to be clear, it isn't easy. It's not because, oh, I'm just surrounded by all this beautiful food that, you know, my kitchen is cooking up. It's not that.
No.
It isn't that at all. I mean, granted, I wasn't a chef, but I've been in plenty of kitchens and I've worked in plenty of restaurants, and you just end up eating over the garbage can or sitting on a milk crate. And
or over the sink.
Or the sink or Taco Bell on the way home, man. It's just that. That's the lifestyle.
Right. Yeah.
So, and that's the part that's hard to give up, because that becomes your routine. That's the habit, you know?
It's not only that. It's the food becomes for the people that are food addicted. Food is a coping mechanism. It's not the drug. It's not the dopamine and all that other stuff. That's my comfort.
Correct.
I haven't eaten all day. This is the way I used to think. I haven't eaten all day, so I can have 7,000 calories today at dinner.
Yeah.
Or 3,000 calories, whatever it was. I mean, I was like a hobbit. I had dinner one, dinner two, dinner three, dinner four. And you can laugh about it. I can laugh about it. But it was slowly killing me. And to realize that and look at yourself, and you did the same thing when the doctors came to you and said, hey, you're not going to be here. I looked around and turned around and said, I'm not going to be here, because I was on that same journey. And I would do that same stupid, you know, cheerleader rah-rah in the morning. Okay, we can't do this again. We're going to do it this way. And then that little kid woke up and was like, yeah, we're going to do it my way. And to go through those emotions and then track back to what started it or what could have started it. I didn't think for a million years journaling would be the way to do things. I used to lie to my therapist. Yeah, I journal today. Once I started journaling, I actually started realizing what I was doing to myself. And it's a constant battle. I just went to the pulmonologist yesterday, found out I lost 6 pounds. Wasn't even trying. I stopped drinking over, now it's about a month and a week now. I didn't do it because I was an alcoholic. I did it because if I can control alcohol consumption, I could better damn well learn how to control my food. And that's one of the things I'm challenging myself. And that's a challenge every flipping day. And it sucks. I would love to be addicted to drugs or alcohol. And people are like, why would you want that? I'm like, I can stop. I can't stop eating. I die. And it's one of those things that you're constantly going for. What do I need? Oh, that's really good. Let me go eat more of that. And then you got to stop yourself. I mean, kudos to you, because you tasted the oxtail and I can't taste anything else.
Exactly.
I can't taste that.
It was delicious.
Thanks.
I had to taste it, because oxtail, guys, ladies and gentlemen, is the most easiest thing to mess up, especially for a Puerto Rican.
You were just checking.
I wanted to make sure. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in here now, and you know, he did open the conversation that it's an honor with my name. Let's make sure it's complete with that, right? Because that's the same thing I would do for him.
Yeah, you got to show respect.
Show respect, right? For the item that you're actually projecting for our nationality. But, delectable. It was delicious. And to piggyback off of what you were saying in the food part, 100% true. I end up having a fatty liver, and by the changes that I made, I actually reversed my fatty liver, and I stopped drinking. I stopped doing a lot of things. And you know, chefs like us, that's our go-to, right? We drink naturally. And people try to understand, like, oh, why do you guys always drink? Well, do 16, 17, 18, 19 hours, and then you tell me what numbs your body.
Okay. Numbs the pain.
Numbs the pain. It's almost like one of those things that, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things that, you know, instead of taking Tylenol and Advil every single day, what's a nice little shot here and there, you know, while you're off work, you know? And it's like, that's why you see everybody in food and beverage. Everybody from food and beverage is running, you know, and going to the bar. I always say, you know, where does the money flow? It's food and beverage. Food and beverage literally takes care of food and beverage, respectfully. You know, you can find everybody there going in there and spending their own money. So at the end of the day, it's a full circle, but there needs to be more awareness. There needs to be, you know, and I've lost friends. You've lost friends, you know, in this day and age of society of where in our lives we have to be a little bit more, you know, reaching out for each other and making sure that we are looking out to, you know, speak, because everybody's scared to speak.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing with mental health illness is we're in a society that we don't talk about those things.
Right.
You know, Brighton Beach Memoirs with Neil Simon is probably one of the best ones where, you know, we used to sit there and go, oh, yeah, diarrhea. We didn't say that. It's so common for us to sit here and talk about the cold, cancer, COVID. But when it comes to mental health, everyone just shuts down.
100%.
And it shouldn't be. It should be that we should be able to talk about our feelings and what's going on in ourselves.
Even Dad is doing it. Just saying. Yeah.
And here's the point. We just lost a coworker that I used to work with at US Foods. Don't know how he passed away. I know about his mental health. And the first thing I asked, and this is what I do as a mental health advocate, was how did he pass? And however he passed, one of the biggest things I got out of the tragedy of losing him is that it brought all of us food fanatics back together and rekindled the family, the what we did and how we became the food fanatics for US Foods. And to reach out to talk to people and be like, hey, I'm struggling. And to have that family come out and say, we're here for you. What do you need? And that is what the true essence of the culinary or the industry is about. It's about being there for one another. It's not about, you know, shaming somebody because they worked only 12 hours. Oh, you're a banker? That's the kind of stuff we need to stop.
Correct. Targeting. Yeah. You need to stop targeting, you know. Again, this career is, you know, you've seen it, Jeff. I mean, 10 years ago, it was crazy. It was crazy. This day and age, chefs aren't the way they used to be. And I'll tell you, you know, I've seen it. I've seen Michelin chefs, they lose their star. They lose themselves. So, you know, reality is where it hits, right? You know, this world of culinary, especially now that it's getting competitive back, we're seeing competitive back, which is amazing, right? And that's the beauty of Walk and Talk, you know, because you guys can see all the new, you guys can experience what's going to be trended. And there's a reason why y'all guys are number one. Let's be fair.
I don't disagree with that.
For sure.
So Jefferson,
mm-hmm.
when you're talking about chefs and we're talking about booze and we're talking about how there is a marriage of sorts between whether it's weed, drinking, pills, whatever.
Alcohol consumption, gambling, sex addiction.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit rackporcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
It cannot just be because my knees hurt or my hands hurt. It's more than that.
It's coping.
It's coping, but it's also, it's a group mentality. It's a group thing because it isn't just the kitchen people. It's the front of the house people. And it's everybody, really. And the truth is, after work, what happens?
That's where the debauchery Correct. Happens.
That's what happens, mm-hmm. right? Let's say your place closes at 10.
God forbid.
You know, if
that's too much time to go out.
Right.
Yeah.
10 o'clock. You go straight to the one yep. watering hole, to the next watering hole. Everybody who was working that shift, they show up there too. And then all of a sudden but why? Why do we do that?
Well,
culture.
Well, it's not only culture. It's we play hard, we work hard. Correct. Or work hard, we play hard. I mean, we are the misfits. We are the pirates. We want to unwind. Everybody else goes out on a 5 o'clock at night. They're going to our restaurants. We're cooking for them as they're unwinding.
Uh-huh.
We do it just later on in the nighttime.
Uh-huh.
We also, that's one of our coping mechanisms. That's why we started out when you're 15, 16. I'm a lot older. I looked older, so I got to drink. I mean, I've been drinking since I was 12.
You do look older.
Yeah, well, now I do. I feel older.
You had a beard when you were 12. Respectfully.
I really did. I really did. I look like Harry and the Hendersons.
That's a great movie.
I'm surprised you know it.
Oh, wow. That's messed up. The big brother's beating on the little brother. Okay. Let's be real.
Listen.
Everybody remembers Bigfoot.
I mean, here's a true story. Here's the thing. I mean, I remember it was in my early 20s. And I had a day, whatever the day off it was. It wasn't like a weekend. It was probably like a Monday or something like that. And I got up probably 10 o'clock, you know.
That's early.
I know. But here's what I did. I went to, there was a particular bar. Went there, ran into some friends from the industry, got hammered, and we were there for, I don't know, several hours. They leave, a new group of friends come.
Oh my gosh.
We leave to another place. I did that 4 or 5 times. I didn't get home until like the next day in the daytime. I don't know. I mean, this was like a fairly, you know, reoccurring thing. And I don't know how on earth that we all, you know, and a lot of us didn't make it, but I don't know how many of us actually did. The lifestyle, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's if you allow it to, it will consume you.
100%.
Yeah.
It's, and again, it's about, we're talking about the book for me, it was a message. One, you're never going to be alone. Two, it's okay not to be okay. To go through and learn how to cope. I mean, I don't know how to do that. Obviously, I'm learning myself how to cope with things and to grab the anxiety or whatever that it's going on in my head. You got to think about it. When we're on the line on a Saturday night and you're pumping out $40,000 in meals at an $18 check average, you're really humming along. Uh-huh. And by the time you're in the day and you've been there since 7 o'clock in the morning and it's 11 o'clock at night, and you just want to unwind and you're like, oh my God, I'm exhausted. You get in the car and you're like, oh crap, there's the second wind. And then the second wind takes you, oh, you know what? You're hungry. Oh, let's go get something to eat. What do? Let's go to the bar. There's your cooks. Hey, chef, let me buy you a round. Then you buy them a round and then somebody else comes in. And then before you know it, you're like 7 sheets to the wind. That's something that we need to learn how to stop. And I think one of the things we need to do is, as a food and beverage industry, is offer more cocktails that are mocktails and not just crap, but something that's decent for people that still want to have that time instead of, can I have a soda water? Come on. If chefs can go out and do things with vegan food now that is stunning, then why can't mixologists come out with some spectacular drinks? And there's people out there that are doing phenomenal with drinks.
But here's the thing. And I get that. I respect and I support and embrace all of this. But I also still have like my pinky is still connected to energy. Even I'm old, you know, if I go out to eat somewhere, I'm getting a cocktail.
That's fine. That's for you though.
No. I get it. And I'm not trying, like I said, I'm not trying to say that's better or worse. Right. What I'm saying is, okay, I'm not going to have 10 cocktails, right? Or more. Those days are long gone for me. But if I'm going to go out and get a mocktail, I'm just going to get a cocktail. Well, or I'm just not going to have a cocktail at all. I don't want to have something that's going to remind me of one. If I want to have one, then I'll just have one. I've come to a place, and I can safely say that I was never addicted to substance. I've done substance. Right. I've had a lot of fun and I've had periods of time where, it was debaucherous, mm-hmm. but it was never an addiction. It was, this is fun. And this is what we're doing right now. I am so lucky that I was able to one day say, close call here, close call there. You know what? Let me pump the brakes a little bit. And I was able to do it. And then I get older, you get to your 30s, your 40s, I'm 50 now. I don't have that drive. But I'll tell you what, I still have the energy. Like I still see people and I'm like, oh man, I'm going to jump into that. You know what I mean? Like I still have that.
Right. Here's the thing. So one of the guys that wrote in the foreword, Mike Buford, he's a fraternity brother of mine. And he admitted to me, one of the reasons why I asked him to write in the book is he goes, I'm an alcoholic. But it started as a food addiction. And it that food addiction transpired into the alcohol. And knowing him and having him say that to me, it kind of made me take a step back and like, I was at a liter. I was at a handle of vodka a week. And that's not good.
Oh.
And again, being a mental health advocate, you have to walk the talk. It's like what I say to people is like, wait, you're going to go to a trainer and they're 700 pounds? No. You're going to go to somebody who's felt, you know, in shape or whatever. You're not going to go to somebody who's out of shape to do it.
Don't eat that. Hey, you want to bite of this hot dog?
Right. Right. And so that's kind of like where I had to take the initiative for myself that, again, if I wanted to learn what a farmer had to go through to grow food, I wanted to learn it. So I started planting food. If I want to learn how to beat this before it beats me, I got to do something to control it. This is the way I did it. This is how I did it. It's not saying that how Jonathan needs to do it or how that person needs to do it. Well, one of the biggest things when he got his book, and I knew he had gotten the book, not from him telling me he bought it. All of a sudden I got, did you get inside my head? And I was like, what the hell is he talking
about? Sure did.
He goes, this is all about me.
Yeah. And I was like, can you change the title, please? Chef Jonathan's addicted to food.
It literally, like, he goes, even my wife wants to read the book after this. He goes, you were literally talking to me. And to hear that, and then you really did touch my heart, because that's the message you want to send out when you write a book or when you try to communicate to somebody. You want to get that message, whatever it is, just to them to understand that, hey, whatever you're going through, we're all going through it. We're all on the same sinking ship. We just don't realize it. I talked to somebody yesterday at the gym because you know that every single person in here is going through their own thing and they're trying to do one thing, change their life to a positive. And I went, holy cow. I do the same thing with people. Like I see somebody and they look depressed or they look a little bit, you know, just the day's gotten them already. And I walk up to them like, you know what? I love your energy. And they're like, oh my God, thank you. And I walk away. That we need to do stuff like that. When we see somebody that just needs a little bit of that, hey, call it a slap on the butt because we're not allowed to do that anymore, but it's a verbal one. Hey, I love what you're doing. I love your energy.
Don't touch me.
Well, no, I'm not going to do that to you.
You know, and I think, anxiety has built its case year over year, and people are getting more and more influenced on that, right? And I didn't know what anxiety was, to be honest with you. I learned what anxiety was being, when I went away. I actually learned what anxiety was when I actually went to do the show for Food Network. And it's crazy. I went to Phoenix for the show taping. And when I was there, I was in a room and I'm just looking at mountains and I'm, pretty relaxed. All of a sudden, I started feeling like shortness of breath. And all of a sudden, it started looking like it was getting darker. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to panic. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to worry. And all of a sudden, I didn't know what to feel anymore. My anxiety took to such a scared in me that I literally thought I was going through a heart attack, dude.
It sounds like when Tony Soprano was looking for the gabagool.
Yeah.
In the refrigerator, had the panic attack and fell in the,
And, it's funny. I just saw something recently on social media, and there's some good aspects of social media.
About gabagool?
Not gabagool. But here's the thing gabagool. About what I read about anxiety in specific. If you hum out loud.
It's a frequency.
No. The humming breaks up your brain and thinking pattern, and it stops and concentrates on that. So you can actually then calm yourself down. And if you can't do it because you're in public, just the thought of humming a song in your head will stop the anxiety. And just how simplistic that is. It's just amazing. I've not done it.
I have. And I will tell you, it actually does work.
Cool.
So you just awesome. Concreted something. I actually went in and spoke to a lady that she is a therapist, and I asked her, I know her very well. But I expressed and I said, listen, how do you control anxiety? Because anxiety is pretty much you're eating yourself through your own battles, and it's just catching you in a different time. And I'll tell you, I haven't mourned for my parents, you know, long enough for me, right? So, you know, those periodic times will come at a random. But I think that that overwhelm of like, I got to get this done. I got to ensure that we're doing well. I got to ensure, you know, people forget that, right? People need to start doing a wellness check on each other more than anything. And I agree with you because that gives us more of an opportunity to be able to prevent that anxiety issue, right? And so I went through the same thing. You know, it's a crazy story, but, you know, I was on my way to Publix to pick up sushi, you know, Sushi Wednesday. And it was phenomenal. And I was excited. And all of a sudden, I remember what that lady said. And she was like, you know, just do, you have to do patterns of low and high. Because what happens is the only way that you can get rid of an anxiety is by not thinking you're having an anxiety. Well, how does that work? My daughter goes through it, right? And when you're starting to see that your kids are now going through it, your mentality is starting to be like eating you up faster because you're like, I can't even fix myself. How am I supposed to help my kid? How am I supposed to walk this through? And all of a sudden, my daughter is listening to music and humming and doing this and doing that. And I'm like, Sophia, what are you doing? She's like, I'm just controlling my anxiety.
Yeah, and that's the key. We can't control anything. That's the wrong word. It's manage.
Manage, correct.
We have to rethink the management of how we're coping and what coping mechanisms are, whatever they be, positive or negative. And that's the key to it. You know, my daughter struggles with mental health, anxiety, and stuff, especially in school. And to see what she's going through, and I tell her all the time, you're going to have enough people in your life that are going to try to bring you down.
Correct.
You have to be your number one cheerleader. Mm-hmm. We're always going to be there because we're mom and dad. But the time things, think about this though. Every time your child comes to you and says, or your dog for John, every time Baxter comes to him and says, hey dad, look what I did. And we go, great. That's awesome. You did a great job. We're reinforcing that they're going to be looking for something. If we just stop for 1 second and say, hey, Sophia, hey, Jillian, hey, Baxter, what do you think about how you did this? And they go, I think I did a great job. You know what? I agree. 100%. You did a great job. The difference is you're letting them express themselves of how they feel about it first.
Take ownership.
Right. And we're training them not to look for, not training. That's not the right word. We're helping them manage their mentoring is a great word. We're mentoring them of how to control things. And I'm 53 years old and I just learned this stuff. I didn't realize how bad my ADHD was. I didn't realize how bad my OCD was.
I mean, I can. John's point looking at you. All of that out.
John's,
to you.
John's looking at you too.
Though. Oh yeah, I'm sure he's looking at me. Looking at you.
No,
he's
like, it's you.
Me. No, he.
And you.
It's what I was saying. It's what I said.
And you.
He's looking at me when you bring it up because he knows that I'm going to jump in and say something about it.
Yeah. Well,
right? Am I right or wrong?
And here's the thing. I know I have it, and I'm looking for a psychotherapist to change that.
I can help you.
I don't need weed.
Oh, that's not where I live anyway.
I have that, so that's fine.
I know you do. But yeah, I deal with a couple of people. You almost did it just then. There's a couple of people that I work with on a regular basis that are ADHD, high quality, big definition, whatever, man. It's like, it's so there. But you know what I do? Because I don't have the heart, unfortunately, to be like, hey, shut the hell up. You know what I mean? Like, stop it. Shut the hell up.
We can't.
You can't. Well, no, so what I end up doing is I listen all the way through.
You sure do. Because I'm ADHD too.
I got to listen all the way through.
You sure does.
And here's the thing. I open myself for it. I feel like the guy from the Green Mile there, you know, like that's what I feel.
Which one? Michael Clark Duncan or Tom Hanks?
The big dude.
Michael Clark Duncan. Guy.
And I'm just like, because afterwards, after I hang up, the phone hangs up or I get away, I'm just like, I'm real tired. You know what I mean? Like,
how do you think we feel? You know, it's funny. I was up north with Keith and we were talking about ADHD. We had a really deep conversation and I go, you know what ADHD is like for people that don't know what it's like? It's when you're watching a bird or something on a power line and it swings and touches the other power line and it sparks off. That's the moment we know as people with ADHD, as Jonathan's shaking his head, we just shortwired right there. We fried ourselves at one for that moment. For everyone else that doesn't have ADHD, it's called squirrel. That's the exact moment for us. And you know where mine comes from? I have pinpointed it
to the restaurant industry. I was told by so many different mentors I was going through, you just can't work on that. You have to work on this. You got to work on that. You got to keep an eye on that. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to do that. And before you know it, you're like, I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm doing this.
Yeah, but hold on. Having ADHD or something, like whatever, that's not a, it's not a bad thing. The most, it's creative people, people who are creative.
Thank you again.
Have this. And just to be clear, I was never diagnosed with this, but I have the same sort of things. I have the same stuff.
Wait, hold on. It's recording. I just want to make sure.
I have the same sort of things. I just hear myself, and I'm not saying I'm perfectly controlling things. I'm not saying that, but I hear myself, and I start to tone down. I figure it out, and I can stop it. So when I am listening to somebody who is just riddled with this, it's torture.
How do you think we feel?
It's torture. I know how you feel because I had the same thing, but I'm absorbing it. So it's another level of torture. Like I want to go to sleep after that. Like I ain't even, I'm not, there's no joke. There's no joke. Anyhow, I think we're onto something
here. We do have a pillow and a blanket, ladies and gentlemen, for him.
I don't need to say face. You can punch me right in the mouth, man. I don't even care. Like I'm that kind of guy. I stuff like this. I might be wrong. And if I say something to offend people, I'm sorry. But I look at any challenge, I get angry with it. Not in a way where I'm uncontrolled angry, but I'm like, you know what? And John can attest to this. There's three or four people in front of me that are impeding me. All right, I'm going to get up to that level and I'm going to attack that. And that's just what and he knows. And that's just how I am. So that could be a group of people. That could be a substance. That could be whatever the hell it is. That's how I do it. I look at it like it's a fight, and I'm going to rise to that fight.
That's your coping way.
That's how I cope. Exactly.
So that's what you branded yourself to do. These are things that for people like Jonathan and I who have addiction, we're trying to figure out what are our ways to stop the insanity, the definition of Einstein's insanity. Because we literally think, well, if we do it this way, we're going to stop it. And it's not.
No. I appreciate that you labeled it as Einstein's, you know, definition of. Everybody's just off the rocker with that definition. It's because it's not the actual.
No. I mean, I wanted to make sure I say, because it is truly Einstein's definition is what we addicts go through.
Yeah.
We think we're going to do the same thing and it's going to change, and it absolutely does not change.
So let me ask you this. Conversations like this that we're having, does that trigger an actual episode of what we're talking about?
So I'll challenge you on this question. When do you stop remembering the memories that you keep remembering? When does a target in your mind that affects you and will always stay in your mind, when does that stop?
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
What stops when I decide to think or do something else that takes my mind away from it?
Because you're coping.
Because you're coping.
Managing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So we're learning how to manage.
Exactly. Us, Jeff and I, right? Because we are totally two different people, but we have similarities, right? And it's not because we're chefs. It just realistically, we share the same, probably this, I guess the same demographic, right? we share the same demographic of where we worked, how we worked, how we've grown up are totally different, right? And this is a perfect example because, you know, Jeff, you're in your 50s.
Yeah.
I'm in my 30s, right? I'm the youngest one in this room, respectfully, right? That proves to you that age doesn't change a thing, right? When you're coping with something, you have an ability to be able to hone it down. You have a control. When you're not coping something, that's where it becomes now a set defect in your brain that's going to trigger you and stay there. When you're talking about something, you're building a repetition of a problem that you've had in the past, and it's going to trigger you. So I think triggers happen at a different pace of depending on the person. But for me, I know that talking about this does pull it up a trick, right? Because it's like, wow, you know, how come I didn't figure it out? How come I can't just write this off? How come I am going through this mentally or physically or emotionally? You know, it becomes more of an intimate situation more than it becomes a situation for others to overview, right?
You know, as we're talking about this, I'm listening to you, obviously, but I'm also flipping through the catalog here in my head. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of times before I got into sales, outside sales, knocking on doors, you know, speaking to, you know, anywhere from 5 to 20 different people a day, different locations, whatever. Before that, you would be in a mood or be in a bad zone, a bad headspace, and your day shot. Okay. You're like, hey, you know what? My day shot. So that does happen in sales and outside sales. But when you're up against goals, the gun, my sales are down, I gotta get them up, whatever. You have to figure out a way to get your mind focused on something else. And I just had an epiphany as during this conversation. Each different client or prospect that I went to go see was that different vibe. Even though it's the same business and it's relative same conversation, it's a different the energy is different because I'm going to a different hotel or a different restaurant. I'm in a different kitchen. Maybe I'm in a banquet space. And because of that, I was able to pivot. I'm just thinking about this now, like, you know, how, you know, what gets you, what will take you out of being in that bad zone? That for me was getting in front of other people, which, you know, in a crazy way got me to be very successful in making the sale, you know, because
it's,
yeah, because I was like, all right, on to the next one. Let me leave the garbage back elsewhere. On to the next one. And that was kind of like maybe, and you could say, well, yeah, you're just running, you know, from whatever it is. But no, I think it was a shift in energy, really.
Yeah, like almost like your pressure detached because every single place gave you a new overview, right? I feel like it's more challenging for us, Jeff.
Yeah.
What
I was about to say is, and this is another, you know, saying in the restaurant industry, you're only as good as your last dish. And that symbolizes a lot with a chef. First of all, it's mortality. You're only good as your last dish. So how much better are you going to be? How much more do you have in the tank? And this is conversations I have with a lot of friends of mine, right? But I think one of the things I do when I do presentations for CaterSource or different organizations, I want to make sure that people realize the ROI as a business owner to talk about mental health. Because as we're sitting here talking about this, we're actually exposing these different weaknesses that our team has. And like you said, I went from one and I had to go to another and it was, I had to meet goals. That's a huge thing for chefs, right?
Oh, well, listen, your last dish is you're only good as your last sale.
It's the same
it's
thing,
the
right?
Same thing.
Right. Yeah, and it's the same thing. But here's the thing. If we realize that if we actually took a second to find out how our staff is doing and really found out, and they have so much more buy-in because you're finding out how they're doing. We spend more hours of the day with total strangers at the beginning of the shift that become our family, more so than our family because we're there 16, 18 hours a day.
That's correct.
But yet we're not finding out how our family is doing. We're not sitting down at a family meal and saying, hey, how's your kid?
You're out of gas. By the time you get home, you're out of gas.
I'm not talking about
orb anymore. Of
yeah, and I'm and that's a whole nother thing yeah. because you have
saying the right stuff. I'm just thinking, you know, yeah. It's just it's how much more. So it's like another shift at home,
right?
You're, you're like a walking therapist, man. You're a walk. No, seriously, you're like a walk. And I know you want to get your point across, but you're like a walking therapist in a kitchen because you're so right. Because even myself, take 2 minutes out of the time of every single person to acknowledge them, and then you look at yourself as a husband or a father, and you're like, oh my God, I can't even give this person 60 seconds.
Exactly. And here's something. I was up in New Hampshire a week ago, 2 weeks ago with Keith.
It's not real unless you say New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. It's wicked. And when I'm sitting in the kitchen, all of a sudden I hear Blue Dolphin. And I went, okay. And then I heard it again. I heard it the third time. And I went, okay. What the heck is this Blue Dolphin? That's our code for drinking. It's time to drink water. And I went, oh my God, I hadn't drank water that entire time it was in the kitchen. How many times do you go throughout the day where you don't drink? And because he has the team and they do certain things they want to make and they manage each other, it was, hey, let's have Blue Dolphin. It's time to drink. Who does that? We don't, there's not many people that are going out there and above, hey, you look a little tired, get off the line. No, we're sitting there screaming, hey, I need how much longer on that penne pasta? Oh, 30 seconds, chef. Don't lie to me. Get it out of the window. After the shift, what are you doing? Are you going up to that person and being like, hey, I'm sorry I had to be that way to you? No, you're like, you do things. And that's not what we need to do. We need to commend people when they're doing the job right. As a great leader, and I'll say this, great leaders encourage their people for greatness. Bosses steal it away. Mm-hmm. And you have to make the decision while you're listening to this or whatever you're going through is what leader do you want to be?
Correct. Seek to understand and be understood.
Mic drop. I mean, so I embrace all of that, and it was in perfect timing as well. We just hit the 1 hour mark, and just like that,
couldn't have timed it even better.
And just like that, another episode in the books. I have a feeling we're going to keep talking about this subject because we got pretty deep today, and I'm glad we did. This was a shotgun sort of. I had another line of topic today with Jonathan. You know what? But during our cooking session here, I decided to pop the clutch and go in a different direction.
Thank you.
With that said,
don't forget about the 30th.
Name of the book.
Cradle Obsessed, Journals of a Food Addicted Chef.
Amazon, right?
Amazon. Okay. That's right.
What are we looking at you?
We got a couple of things going on. We got October 7th, I'm going to be doing a Boss Talk overview with a beautiful group, Entrepreneurship for Women, and we're going to be speaking about that. And we just got Best Rooftop for Sally Mars. So we are going to be doing this, getting that award.
All right. That's awesome. Listen, you guys are freaking badasses. Thanks for coming in today, Jonathan. Jeff, you're amazing. Love you. John, we are out. Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.